What's up, Echo Church? It is great to be with you all today. A big welcome to all of our campuses and to those of you who are joining us online. My name is Philip Pattison. I'm a part of the team here at Echo. I lead something, an initiative that started right here at Echo called Foster the Bay. And I am stoked to be here with you, continuing a teaching series that we started last week called Irresistible. I'm glad we're having this conversation because this is something that's really near to the heart of our church. In fact, this is one of the things that actually really drew my wife and I to Echo. Some of you know our story. Prior to coming to Echo, I was pastoring a church in South San Jose, a church called Twin Oaks. Great church in South San Jose. And about 4 years ago, we made the decision to actually join forces with Echo. We became a part of Echo Church. We relaunched the campus and we became the South San Jose campus. Shout out South San Jose. That's your history. People ask me though, all the time, they've asked me over the years, like, why did you guys make that decision to become a part of Echo? Why did you make that the decision to merge and come under the umbrella of Echo Church? And the assumption is like, surely your church must have been falling apart. Like, were people leaving in droves? And honestly, the answer is no. Or like, were you guys financially struggling? And no, not at all. We were actually doing pretty well. Can I tell you why we made that decision? I love Twin Oaks Church. I loved our people. I loved our leadership. But there were times when I would open up the scriptures or I'd open up the history books and I would read about these great movements of God. It's, you know, you look at the early church, right after Jesus died and he rose again and he ascended back into heaven. We're told that there are about 120 followers of Jesus. Within a matter of like weeks and months, like they were starting to impact a tremendous amount of life, thousands and then tens of thousands. A couple hundred years later, you went from 120 followers of Jesus to historians estimate somewhere around 30 million followers of Jesus. 30 million lives that had been changed. That's an average growth of almost 40% per decade for almost three centuries. It's an insane amount of growth. It's an insane amount of impact. I would read about these incredible movements of God. And honestly, there was a deficit between what I was reading and what I was leading and how I was leading. And so as we got to know Echo Church and its leadership here, there was just something that drew us. Now, Echo Church is not a perfect community in any way. Like, we've got lots of areas where we need to grow in as a community. Pastor Andy, if you were standing up here with me, he'd tell you the very same thing. And yet what I saw, what my wife saw, what our leaders at Twin Oaks saw in this church community was a relentless pursuit of the elements, the essential elements that I believe helped the early church and other movements of God to be explosive and irresistible. And we said, we want that. We want in. And so we joined forces, and the rest is history. What I'd like to do today is I'd like to look at some of those essential elements, like those characteristics that make a movement of God so explosive and irresistible, okay? To do that, we're gonna look at Matthew chapter 5. And we're going to start in verse 13. We looked at this real briefly last week with Pastor Andy. He pointed out that these few verses here, this is Jesus speaking to us, are really like a great vision of what it would look like for us to be this irresistible community. I want to dive just a little bit deeper this week. So Matthew chapter 5, we'll start together in verse 13. And this is what it says. Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." Okay, so let's begin with this. An irresistible movement begins with irresistible light. Over and over again in these verses, Jesus is going to tell us that we live in a world that needs light. That without this light, we're living in darkness. Let me tell you what I think he means by that. Let me tell you about a guy named Ernest Shackleton. Okay, Ernest Shackleton was a really famous British explorer. And Shackleton was famous because he got stranded in Antarctica for several months on one of his expeditions. And it was said that out of all of the difficulties that he faced, out of all the challenges and the hardships that they experienced, the most difficult thing, including starvation, including freezing temperatures, the most difficult thing he faced was the darkness. Because in the South Pole, the sun goes down in May and doesn't come back up until July. So 2 solid months of nothing but pitch black, utter darkness. He said, in darkness like that, a man can go mad. You go insane. Think about it for a second. Like, you can't see your hand in front of your face. And so, like, you can't see what's in front of you. Like, so you lose all sense of direction. You can't see what's around you. Like, you can't see what's standing right next to you. So you lose all sense of security. You can't see what you look like anymore. Like, you can't look at yourself. Like, he said, it almost feels like you're beginning to lose your very identity. So follow me. No sense of direction, no sense of security, no sense of identity. I think that this is what Jesus is telling us our spiritual condition is apart from him. I know that this has been true for my life. And I'm confident that this has been true for your life at some point as well. And you might be at one of our campuses today and you're just checking things out and you're new to all of this. And honestly, that comes across a little bit offensive. Like, I don't know you, I don't know your story, and here I am saying, hey, you don't have direction or security or identity, you're walking in darkness, right? And you're desperate for some kind of light to break through. I get that can come across a little offensive. But listen, if you're honest, I think we all understand this, to at least some degree, is true. I'll even give you one small example of why I think we all resonate with this a little bit. Think for a moment about some of the stories that we tell over and over again. Think about the stories that we resonate the most with. I've shared this before a few years ago. I feel like it's worth sharing with you again. Think about the great stories that we celebrate the most. Why is it that generation after generation after generation, we continue to tell stories about damsels in distress, like locked in some tall tower, you know, and everything's dark and we're enslaved by some evil dragon. And when all hope seems lost, in comes riding a knight in shining armor and does battle against the evil one and comes and rescues the damsel in distress. And together they ride off into the sunrise happily ever after. Why do we tell that story over and over and over again? Like, do you realize that is the story of Jesus? That is the gospel message. That's the story of Jesus. Think about how often we retell the same story over and over and over and over again. I'll give you just a few examples. Sleeping Beauty. Sleeping Beauty reminds us that death is not the end. That one day a prince is going to come and do battle against evil and will come and kiss us and wake us out of our sleep. Cinderella. Cinderella tells us that one day a prince is going to come and rescue us from a life of oppression and bring us into his family and make us royalty. Beauty and the Beast. Maybe one day there will be a beauty that will come and see past all of our mistakes and will love us right where we are. And that love will make us into something beautiful. You follow me? Peter Pan. Maybe one day somebody will come and fly away with us to a land where we'll never grow old. We could go all day long with this. Tangled, Frozen, Chronicles of Narnia, Harry Potter. Like, seriously, we could go all day. With just Lion King. Lion King is one of my absolute favorite because Lion King, well, you know what Lion King tells you? Lion King says that when the rightful king is sitting on the throne, that all is well, that the land lives in peace and harmony and light. But when the evil one comes and takes the throne, everything falls apart. And if you remember the original one, I haven't even seen the new one, but if you remember the original one, like when the artists illustrated actually the scenes when Scar, like the evil one, is on the throne, if you remember, everything's actually dark. Do you remember that? Yeah. They actually illustrate it. It's dark and it's desolate. But you know what the Lion King also tells us? The Lion King also tells us that one day the son of the king is coming back. And when he does, he's going to do battle against the evil one. He's going to come back and take the throne that rightfully belongs to him. And when he does, the rain is going to come and wash away the desolation. The light is going to break through the clouds and all will once again be made right and good. The land will live in peace and harmony and light and all the sad things will come untrue. Why is it that we continue to tell the same story over and over and over again? Could it be that we resonate so deeply with this because we know that this is ultimately what we need? This is our deepest desire. So when my little girl, who's 2 years old right now, when she gets a couple years older, my littlest, when she gets a couple years older and she comes to me and says, Daddy, I wish there was a real prince who would come and make me a princess. I wish there was a real Superman who would come from some other world with powers to fight evil. I wish there was somebody who would really come to me and fly away with me to a land where I'd never grow old. Do you know what I can tell her? I can say, sweetheart, there is a prince. There is a real prince. There is a Superman. There is a knight in shining armor. There is a beauty that will see past our mistakes and see past our ugliness and will love us right where we are and is making us into something beautiful. There is a light breaking through the darkness. Friends, the stories are true. The stories are true. There is a knight in shining armor, and his name is Jesus. Jesus is the light of the world. And again, this is one of the things that really drew us to this church. Leadership talks have their place. Self-improvement talks, self-improvement plans have their place. But you will never hear a message on this platform, on the platform of any of our campuses across the Bay Area, where Jesus is not at the center. Because what the Bay Area needs and desperately wants is a hope and a light that only Jesus can offer. Jesus is the light of the world. That's the first thing he tells us here in Matthew 5, but there's a second thing. He tells us as well how this world is going to experience the light that he's offering. Jesus, in verse 14, he says this. He says, you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. All right, so if you're paying any attention at all, I literally just told you Jesus is the light of the world, and now Jesus here says, you are the light of the world. So I'll leave it to you who you're going to believe, me or Jesus. No, it's, I know it's confusing, but actually if you keep reading, it's actually like crystal clear what Jesus means. Because he tells us what kind of light we are. He doesn't compare us here in Matthew 5 to lights like the sun or like stars, like things that like in and of themselves have light, like in their own essence have light. He says that we're like lamps. We know that lamps don't produce light. Lamps can only hold light. In the same way, you and I become the light of the world when Jesus lights us up, when the true light of the world lights us up. And since the earliest days of the church, we've actually seen what this can look like. I've already mentioned them to you, the early followers of Jesus, 120 or so followers of Jesus that we know of. They were terrified about their future after Jesus had died and risen again and ascended into heaven. We're told that they were terrified about what was to come. They were scared of what might happen to them because they had been following Jesus. So they were nervous about persecution that might come their way. We're told at one point that they were actually all huddled up in a room upstairs with the doors locked, praying, just terrified. And as they were praying, we're told that the Holy Spirit comes down on these disciples and in such a powerful way, it's as if tongues of fire rest on in each one of them and they're just lit up by Jesus. You know what happens? As that happened, their fear melted away. They were given this like new sense of direction and this purpose, and their hearts got bigger for their neighbors who were far from God. And so they got up, they unlocked the doors, they went down the stairs into the streets and started sharing the message and the hope of Jesus with anybody who would listen. And they started loving their neighbors in these unprecedented ways. And what happened was Jerusalem was lit up and it was changed. And then Judea and then Samaria and then the world has never been the same. For 2,000 years, God has advanced his light in our world through men and women and children like you and like me. Jesus says, you are the way that I'm going to bring hope to this city. You are the way that I'm going to bring my light to your neighbors and into your neighborhoods and your workplaces and your homes. It's through you. You are the light of the world. And then he says, you are the salt of the earth. I haven't even touched that yet. Let me tell you what I think he means by that. You are the salt of the earth. In Jesus's day, salt was primarily used as a preservative. That was its main use. Okay, so there was obviously no freezers back then. There was no refrigeration 2,000 years ago. So if you had a big slab of meat and you didn't want it to immediately go bad, you have to douse the thing with salt. And it was a preservative. So follow me. you put salt into that which would ordinarily decay, and it would keep it from breaking down. Okay? You put salt into that which would ordinarily decay, fall apart, and it would keep it from breaking down. I think this is what Jesus is telling us. When your world was falling apart, when your world was in decay and it was breaking down, everything was going bad, I didn't keep my distance. I punched a hole in the ceiling of your world and I stepped in. I came near. I didn't run from your brokenness. I ran into your brokenness. And now I want you to do the same thing. Like salt, I want you to go find things that are falling apart and I want you to get in there. I want you to bring wholeness and I want you to bring healing. I want you to find things that are breaking down, systems and people, organizations, churches. I want you to get in there and I want you to be like salt. I want you to go in there and I want you to make them whole. And again, for the last 2,000 years, this is what the people of God have done over and over and over and over. We have historical records of a guy named Julian, who was one of the last Roman emperors, actually writing a letter to his friend who was a pagan priest. He said, you know, after looking at the Christian movement and how unstoppable and irresistible and explosive it's been and the way that it's taking over the Roman Empire, he said, after looking at it, I think one of the reasons why it's so unstoppable is because of the way that they take care of the poor. He didn't say, well, have you heard Philip's messages? Man, right? Or have you seen how great their marketing technique is? My goodness. Or how nice their building is? No, he says, it's unstoppable because of the way that they take care of the poor. And not just poor from their own Christian communities, but like people who are complete strangers to them. It's making their movement so attractive and irresistible. We have historical records of Christians who gave their lives for their neighbors during the plagues that rocked the ancient world. Rather than fleeing to the countryside, we have records Christians would stay in the city and they would take care of the sick, oftentimes even contracting the diseases themselves, forfeiting their own lives for the sake of their neighbors. We have historical records of Christians leading the fight against what they called infant exposure. This is when they would take unwanted babies and they would discard them in these designated places outside of the city. This is a totally common, totally acceptable practice at the time. But Christians said, no, these kids matter to God. And so they would go out and they would rescue these children. They would bring them into their own homes and raise them up as their own sons and daughters. We have historical records of Christians starting the very first hospitals. In 350 AD, there's a guy named Ephraim in the city of Edessa who opened up a hospital during a particularly bad plague. And he started bringing the sick in and started caring for them. This was revolutionary at the time. It was completely unheard of. A few years later, a woman named Fabiola in the city of Rome did the very same thing. She was a wealthy woman, high society, but she would actually, regardless of her status, regardless of her position, she would actually walk the streets herself looking for the sick and then bringing them into the hospital. Within a matter of years, the Christian church was responsible for thousands of hospitals all over Europe. The Christian church has been the catalyst for prison reform, education reform, women's rights, the abolition of slavery, civil rights, adoption, foster care. Like, that's our history. This is what we do. This is what we do. We find things that are falling apart and we go in like salt and we bring wholeness. This is what we do. We find systems that are broken down and we go in. When we see people that are falling apart emotionally, we don't keep our distance from them. We go in. We see neighborhoods that are falling apart socially and economically. We don't just move to the next neighborhood over. Right? As Christians, we go in. We're salt. That's not just our history then. This is our today. This is why we started Foster the Bay. Because a few years ago, we found out that there were more children entering into foster care than there were homes that were ready for them. There were kids in our neighborhoods who had been abused or neglected. And they'd experienced this heartbreaking trauma. And they were entering into foster care and there weren't enough loving, stable, supported homes for them. And we knew we had to do something. You could turn a blind eye and you can walk away or you get in there. And so we started meeting with other pastors in the area. And we started saying, man, what if we were to do this together? Like, would you join us? And let's start providing enough homes for these kids. And so we started that a few years ago. We started one church right here at Echo Church. And what's happened is now a few years later, we're now working with 92 Bay Area churches working towards a day. 92 churches and 12 different agencies working towards a day when there's going to be a waiting list of families rather than a waiting list of kids. We've already seen 175 children, vulnerable children, placed in the Foster the Bay homes. And I just want to take a moment. I want to honor you for playing such a significant role in that. I mean, this church has done some incredible things. Many of you have, you've opened up your homes to kids. You've supported foster parents. You've been praying. You've been giving generously to Echo Church. And as you're giving generously to Echo, that's enabling Echo to put funding towards this initiative. I just want to take a moment and honor you. The reality is, though, that there are some of you as well, though, that maybe you've been thinking for a while about what it would look like for you to get involved. Something's been stirring in your heart. And if that's the case, I want you to know there's a place for you. There's much more to be done. In fact, I want to invite you to watch this quick video with us, and you can hear a little bit more about the heartbeat of Foster the Bay and how you can be involved. Do you remember those Choose Your Own Adventure books from when you were a kid? There were these points in the book where you were given a choice. You could go to the right, you could go to the left. Like, you could choose the broad road, or you could choose some narrow path that like led you down into some dark forest. You could choose to accept the help of some mysterious stranger or go on alone. I think one of the reasons why we liked those books so much was because it felt like a whole life was ahead of us. Like, there was an endless number of possibilities. But I think another reason why we were drawn to those books is because as kids, so little of our real life was actually in our control. Someday, we would be the subjects in our own story, but for now, we were the objects of someone else's. And of course, at the time, we didn't really understand how the choices that were being made for us were going to impact the kinds of choices that we could make for ourselves later. If anything, this is even more true for those who are growing up in the foster care system. These are kids with the same capacity for hope and adventure as you and me, but experiencing the trauma that led them to be removed from their biological family and then getting shuffled around over and over again sets these kids on a path that they didn't choose, and their stories can easily take a turn. In fact, youth in foster care are 43% less likely to earn a high school diploma, and only 3% will go on to earn a college degree. Half of the youth that age out of the foster care system will be unemployed by their mid-20s, and a third will live on the streets. And according to the FBI a few years ago, 60% of the children that they rescued from human trafficking right here in the States had spent time in the child welfare system. Hearing these statistics, it's easy for us to think that the ending's already been determined for a child in foster care. But here's the truth. The child's story hasn't been written yet. The ending's not set. Because into this child's life comes a mysterious stranger. And all of a sudden, the trajectory of a child's life can be changed, and new possibilities can emerge. Across the Bay Area, there are new stories being written. Foster the Bay is a coalition of churches committed to providing a loving home for every child in the foster care system. The reality is that right now there are more kids entering into foster care than there are homes that are ready to care for them. But as Christians, we know that the story's not over, and we know that we have a role to play. 2,000 years ago, Jesus came and declared a new chapter in God's unfolding story of love and reconciliation. It was good news to the poor. It was good news to the brokenhearted. It was good news to the mistreated, and now we get to be that good news in the life of a vulnerable child. Foster the Bay helps people like you and me live out God's love for vulnerable children. And we do this in a few key ways. First, we raise up advocates who develop foster care ministries in their local churches. Secondly, we raise up foster families to provide loving, stable homes for children who have been abused or neglected. And then finally, we raise up support friends who provide emotional, practical, spiritual support for foster families, which helps them foster longer and better. For thousands of children in foster care, their stories aren't written, and neither is yours. Maybe your next great adventure is to play a role in making sure that every vulnerable child in your city has a place to call home. To learn more, visit fosterthebay.org/get involved. I'd like to set the record straight. I'm pretty sure I actually made that shot. I think in editing they changed it, but I'm totally kidding. I totally missed that shot. But listen, hey, if there is something stirring in your heart and you are interested in learning more about, you know, what it would look like to get involved as a foster parent, as a support friend, you want to pray in any way, I want to encourage you, take a moment on that connection card, just write the word foster. Okay, you can do that. You just write the word foster. If you do that, you're not signing your name on a dotted line. We're not sending you home with a foster kid today. We're just simply going to email you this week with some next steps, okay? But listen, I know that I've lost some of you. I know that some of you have already disqualified yourself from any of this. This whole idea of being salt and light, because the only examples that I've given you today are these like monumental epic pictures of social justice, right? But please don't get it twisted. You don't have to be a contributing member of an irresistible community doesn't mean you've got to go out and start a hospital, all right? Or help somebody with a plague, or even be a foster parent. Okay, that's not what I'm intending today. In fact, being salt and light is often as simple as asking yourself this question each day: what can I make better today? If you're taking notes, write that down. What can I make better today? Salt makes things better, right? Salt isn't just a preservative. Salt is also a seasoning. It's the original seasoning, right? So I have fried eggs like almost every morning, okay? And I also am wrangling four children and trying to get them to school with my wife. And so it's not uncommon for me to miss steps in the morning. And so there have been plenty of times where I've forgotten to put salt and pepper on my eggs. You know, it's not that great. Fried eggs without salt. But you put some salt on that, a little bit of pepper in there. That's like a little taste of heaven in the morning. Okay. Salt makes things better. But listen, I have never said after I had a really great plate of eggs, I've never said, man, that was some great salt. Never, not once. I've never said, wow, that is some great salt. I say, man, that was some great eggs. You know why? Because the job of salt is not to make you think about how great salt is. The job of salt is to help you, let me see how to phrase this. The job of salt is not to make you think about how great salt is. The job of salt is to help you think about how great the thing is that it's involved with. You follow me? In the same way, Christians make things better. But we don't make things better so that you think we're great. We don't make things better so that we look great or feel great. We make things better, we make things great for their sake. I want you to think about just how, if we could get this, if we could understand the implications of this, and if we could fully embrace this, this would change everything. We would be the best employees, the best friends, the best spouses, the best parents, the best neighbors. You know why? Because we wouldn't walk into these places and into these relationships and simply say, what am I going to get out of this? Because like salt, we're going to go in and make things better for their sake. We would go into our workplaces and we say, how can I make this place great? Not for my own self-ambition, but because I want the mission of the organization to be great, to move forward. We would go into our marriages saying, how can I make my wife better? Never ask that question, how can I make my wife better? That's a terrible thing to say. Let me say it like this. How can I make my wife great? That's what you should say. What can I do to help my wife be great today? Not because I'm racking up a list of IOUs or because I'm looking forward to getting paid back, but because I simply want her to be great. One of the things that frustrates me so much about Silicon Valley sometimes is this attitude where people will enter into companies with this transient mindset, where they walk into companies and basically say, how can I get the most out of this company and use this as a stepping stone for my self-ambition to get to the next level? How common is that attitude? One of the reasons why so many of our marriages fail today is because we go into these marriages saying, what am I going to get out of this thing? How different would it look this week if you were to enter into the week each day as salt? Say, What can I make better today? Who can I make better today? What can I make great? Not for my own sake, but for their sake. You see? This is what it looks like for us. How can I make my city a better place to live? How can I make my workplace a better place? How can I love and serve my friends and my coworkers and my neighbors and not simply see them as tools to be used for my own self-ambition? How can I make my city a better place to live? I'll give you one way that you can do that this week. A great way that you can do that this week. You can be a part of one of our serve days coming up. Across all of our campuses, we have serve days coming up over the next couple of weeks. For example, our South San Jose campus, we're going to be descending on Santa Teresa High School, and we're going to be catching up on their landscaping and the beautifying of their campus because the gardener who typically does that has been out battling cancer. So there's no fanfare involved. There's no like, we're not looking for a plaque with our name on it from the school or some social media recognition. There was simply a community of people in South San Jose that said, hey, we see an area where you're really struggling and we'd like to help. Is there a way that we can help make this better? We've got projects like that happening at all of our campuses. Be a part of the survey. That's a perfect way for you to be salt and light to the Bay Area. What can you make better today? What can you make better tomorrow? I'll have to wrap up here. I'm almost out of time. But let me just share one final thought before I go. As I was praying and thinking through this last week, and I was thinking like, what would be the hesitations for folks to really embrace this invitation that Jesus has given us to be salt and light? And I came up with two. I think there are a couple of reasons why we might hesitate in this. And the first one is this. If we're honest, being salt and light doesn't always fit with our other priorities. It doesn't always fit within our other agendas and with our other goals. There are other things that are competing for that place in our life. So because of that, I think it's important that we don't miss the warning that Jesus gives us here in Matthew 5. He says, if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. If salt has lost its taste, I learned something this week. Salt can't actually lose its taste. Like scientifically speaking, there's no expiration date for salt. It doesn't go bad. The only way that salt can actually lose its taste is if something from the outside comes in and contaminates it. If something from the outside comes in and pollutes it. Which reminds me of a verse in James 1. It says, religion that God our Father sees as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. So the mandate's clear. Like God is calling us to be his hands and his feet and his voice, specifically to the poor and the marginalized and the hurting, those who are far from him and those who are in need. But he says, watch out, be careful, because there are gonna be other things that are gonna come at you. They're gonna compete for that place and are gonna be potentially like contaminating who I've called you to be as salt and light in the world. There will always be other things competing for your affections and your attention, whether it's comfort or pleasures or self-ambition or notoriety or financial security. But friends, you and I were meant for more than that. You and I were meant for more than that. It's time that we stop living as if the purpose of life is to arrive safe and comfortable at our death. Can I say that again? It's time that we stop living as if the purpose of life is to arrive safe and comfortable at our death. We were meant for more than that. The second hesitation, though, that I think we might have in really embracing this whole idea is because we wonder, like, really, honestly, what difference am I gonna make? Like, I'm one person. I'm just an average person. I'm nobody important. Like, really, am I really gonna, like, light up a city? And here's the truth. Like God cares about your individual impact. He cares about the things that you do each day, the big things and the small things. They matter to him. However, there's some truth to that hesitation. Your individual impact is limited. But that's why I think Jesus gives us such a beautiful picture of what it would look like if we did this together. He says, you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. So in that time, And it's pretty rare for a city to be built up on a hill. It was really expensive to do that. You had to get all the stuff up that hill. That's pretty rare. Typically, cities are built down in the valleys and over down by the rivers and at the bottom of hills. That's where the cities and villages would be. In the rare occasion when a city would be built up on a hill, at nighttime, when the lanterns were lit and the homes were lit and the shops were lit and the streets were lit and all the torches were lit, that city could be seen by all of the other villages and cities around for miles and miles and miles. So think about the picture that Jesus is painting us. Like, yes, I care about what you do, your individual impact. I'm calling you individually to be salt and light to your neighborhoods and your homes and your workplaces. But I'm also calling you to be a community, a city. If there is a group of you collectively working, entering into places that are falling apart and places that are in need, and you're being light and you're making things better and more beautiful together, your impact is going to be further reaching and it's going to be more visible to a watching world. Like, that's the beauty of these serve days. Like, if Pastor David from the South San Jose campus goes next Saturday by himself and he starts picking weeds from the San Ynez High School for a few hours, like, that's cool. Like, there's value to that. But how much better is it going to be? How much greater of an impact are we going to make when dozens and dozens and dozens of people descend on that campus and we transform the landscaping? It's the same thing with Foster the Bay. Like, my wife and I, we are foster parents. We're fostering a little girl right now. Like, there's value to that one impact for her one little life. But you know what's even cooler? Is the fact that our whole church cares about this. And we're working together across four different campuses caring about vulnerable children. And what's more, we brought 91 other churches with us. Think about the testimony that is to a watching world, as our impact is much, much greater. In fact, a few years ago when we first launched our South San Jose campus, we reached out to some of the social workers that we've been partnering with in that. And we said, hey, we've just really enjoyed getting to know you guys and working with you. You've been a really important part of our story. We would be honored if you would come and you'd celebrate this special day with us as we launch the South San Jose campus. Because of what they had seen in our church and through our church, they said yes. And they came, and so when we launched that campus, we had a whole row of social workers. And in fact, that day, our family social worker placed your faith in Jesus. We're going to see stories like that happen over and over and over and over again. If we as a community are committed, regardless of what it takes, committed to being salt and light, God's hands and his feet and his voice to the Bay Area. You with me? My prayer for us is that as the watching world looks into our church community and into our homes and into the way that we work and into the way that we spend our money and the way that we spend our time and the way that we show hospitality to our neighbors and the way that we engage the vulnerable and the way that we don't run from things that are falling apart, but the way that we run into things that are falling apart, that when the watching world sees this, that they would marvel and they would wonder, and that ultimately they would see the source of our light, the true light of the world, that they would see Jesus. You with me? Yeah. Let's pray. God, that is our prayer today. God, we want to show the watching world all throughout the Bay Area who you are, how beautiful you are, what the amazing things that you have done for us, the way that you have brought light into our darkness. In the same way that you have loved us, would you let us love others in your name? God, I pray that you would help us as individuals, as families, and as a church community step into this, God, with just a full surrender, full embrace. God, we love you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.